Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to our good news segment. I'm Dr. Pat. Listen, think about this. What if you can save and improve the lives of thousands of children worldwide? Did you know one in every 33 babies is born with a birth defect? What if you could do something to change the trajectory of that? What if you could do that? Dr. Holly Hedrick is joining me here today, attending pediatric and fetal surgeon at Children's Hospital Philadelphia. And we are here to share with you just that, how we can save those lives, those infants, those babies. Dr. Holly, thank you for joining me here today. I don't think that people are aware of how far we have progressed to save the lives of these babies. I think that once upon a time, we just looked at something and said, that's just the way it's going to be. But can you give us a snapshot of where we were and where we are today, just so people know what you all have been doing to save lives? Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. The field of fetal surgery is about 40, 50 years old, and even neonatal care is actually rather young. If you think about it, the first babies were intubated in the 60s and had respiratory support. So the whole field of just care in general has progressed. And so with that, we just looked and we've been able to track a lot of natural history and know when things are going wrong. And so this was really the impetus to try to do things sooner and sooner to try to correct things before babies are even born. To, like you say, save a lifetime, just change the whole trajectory, change the course.
Mm-hmm. You know, everybody gets tapped on the shoulder to really enact and enliven their passion in this world and give back. Clearly, that's you. Can I ask you, what is it about your role and your passion and purpose? You know, when I think about your career path and you know, pediatric surgery, and I'm thinking about your trajectory of your life, what was it in your life where you knew this was something you absolutely were passionate about doing for as a career, but also to save lives?
You know, as a trainee, you are exposed to a lot of different things, and there are times where it just doesn't feel like work. And that was really the first thing. It was like this idea that you can fix things, this idea that you can focus on the things you can do rather than focusing on the things that are wrong. The diagnostic phase is all great, but the sort of fixing phase is just fun and so rewarding. And so I think that was like the real, and it seemed fantastic. It seemed like fantastic voyage,
yeah.
Right? It seemed like I was pinching myself to be in the room. So there was an awe to it all, a very inspiring awe to it, and mentors that did incredible things. So, you know, it only takes like one interaction to change somebody's lifetime.
Right.
In terms of choosing your life's purpose and also in terms of your own, you know, outcomes for the patients that are treated. So it's sort of being eyes wide open to what excites you all the time.
And, you know, that's why I ask you the question, because, you know, this is one of those areas where you literally can change the lives of a child, a baby, and a family. And I want to ask you, as we go through this, Dr. Hedrick, I want to ask you about what types of conditions are we talking about? Because I think our audience has heard of this, but I don't think they are aware of exactly what we're talking about.
So I love how you pointed out that it happens to one out of every 33 babies, and it costs billions of dollars. No parent is immune. Every time you're waiting for that 20-week anatomy scan, you know, there's the possibility that somebody says that there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know why some birth defects happen. There's research that's happening on many fronts. And it's the leading cause of infant mortality. The problems that we know that we can do something about, most commonly now have to do with spina bifida,
mm-hmm.
in terms of a fetal intervention. Also to do with things that cause, fluid to connect in compartments. Something called a shunt can be placed. And so, that is a common procedure. And then there are twin problems, where one twin is stealing from another twin, the twin-twin transfusion syndrome, where that is a minimally invasive procedure that is performed frequently in 2020. And so these are really three areas where we know we make a huge difference, where, you know, bad outcomes were imminent and now they are not. There are also other things that we'd like to address, and I think there's ongoing research, you know, on that. And so at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, I mean, there's been an incredible laboratory effort from the beginning. And so that translational component, where you're always looking for things to improve and then translating that into the clinic. And so that's very real and ever-present.
Yeah, you really brought up something that many people don't quite understand, and it took me a little bit of personal experience to understand it myself, is that there's the science of things, and then there is the bring it into the actual healing environment in a hospital or in a doctor's office. And those two things are separate and apart, but they're related. I want to ask you, when all is said and done, how has this changed the lives of the babies? What I mean is, you know, what are the long-term results, and what are you most excited about when you kind of take a peek out for the future?
I think the first thing is that you mentioned was that diagnostic phase, where just because something's rare doesn't mean there's nothing that can be done. And so we're all about possibilities, like possible solutions.
Yeah.
And so that's the exciting part. The long-term is a very important thing to track and to know actually what's happening. And so there are long-term follow-up, multidisciplinary, transdisciplinary, interdisciplinary programs to really tease out all the outcomes. And things are really promising. I think that some diagnoses that we thought were absolutely devastating and there was no hope, that we can offer a lot of hope for, and we can show videos of kids, you know, running around and having, you know, fun-filled, typical lives, where that wasn't possible before. And so that's our most gratifying thing, right? When we have our little reunions where we see the patients back. I think it's awareness too, is why we're so happy that you're doing a show like this. It's that just because something's rare doesn't mean that there's nothing that can be done. And so, it's giving access to expert opinion to know if there is. And there isn't always, but sometimes there really is something life-changing.
There is something life-changing. And I love what you just said about just because it's rare. By the way, when we started 11 years ago to create this network, they told us we were out of our minds. You know, to create a positive tech talk radio network was absolutely rare. Nobody wants to be educated and informed. And guess what? They were wrong. So I totally relate to where you are, but you said something that's so important to me, and I want to get back to it. We live in the world of possibilities in this network. That is one of our key themes. You said that word, and that is something that we don't talk about enough when we're talking about this particular subject. We don't talk about possibilities, but isn't that in effect, doctor, isn't that what you have then now provided people, possibilities that they didn't have before?
Oh, for sure. And there's ripple effects too. It's like there's whole systems that were born out of this. So, because we want to be able to take care of if we do a prenatal procedure, we want to be able to take care of the baby and the mother at the time of birth. We've developed a program or a center that has, you know, birth actually inside of a children's hospital where the baby can be cared for right away and not have a transport. So mm-hmm. things like that are a ripple effect that came out of the field.
Mm-hmm.
There are other things that just make the field better for everybody, even patients that don't have a birth defect. And so those ripple effects, those positive things that happen that carry down and change the trajectory for all patients.
I know you've got to run off, but I want to make sure we tell folks, number one, how do we find out more about this, about the progress? How do people stay plugged in?
We have a website, fetalsurgery.chop.edu. If you can just type into your browser fetal surgery and lots of information comes up. You can type in prenatal diagnosis and information comes up. And then within that, on that website, there's, you know, all the diagnoses that are treatable and all the diagnoses that we diagnose and perhaps we do something shortly after birth, will be information. Knowledge is power. So there's a lot on that site and it will link you to other sites.
Wow. I want to ask you this last thing because we're watching a lot of television. We're watching a lot of doctor shows, by the way. And one of the things that I know we are, we're so obsessed with it, right? You know, you watch a show like The Good Doctor and you think that's real life. But I want to ask you this question because I just recently had a surgery. So I'm very familiar with what happens in a hospital during COVID-19. And my experience was absolutely stellar. And I think we're not talking about that enough. Has COVID affected anything in the realm of providing these surgeries?
Well, we were just as busy. So babies yeah. were still diagnosed with
yeah.
problems and patients were still cared for.
Yep.
And so it is the one area in the hospital where we did not really shut
yeah.
down at all. We developed a bunch of protocols that have kept people safe.
Yep.
And we're happily all vaccinated now. There's lots of protocols in place. And some of them, you know, some of the things, again, it's that ripple effect. Some things like the number of video visits, those may stay up just because now that's more convenient for people. And so there are some things that because of COVID will actually be better for everybody
yep.
in the future. So it was very, very frightening in those early weeks. But I think that we figured it out.
Yeah. You know, and I want to say that too, because it was frightening for me to have scheduled a major surgery and then to be able to go in and just watch the pure perfection of how hospitals and doctors have been able to turn on a dime. And I want to congratulate you all for that, because this is the untold story. This is one of the stories that's not being told. And I want to congratulate you for that, because you did not let COVID-19 stop your ability to save these babies. Thank you so much. One more time, let us know how to find out more. What's that website?
It is fetalsurgery.chop.edu. Once again, fetalsurgery.chop.edu. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this today. We're going to take a short break, everybody. Please check it out. We'll be right back.
Your inspiration all day on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's so great to have you join us in our good news segment. So, you know, I came across someone who literally described my world for the past year or so. And when I thought about this, I thought about, you know, what does it take to be the rugged entrepreneur? What is it that every business leader should know? What do you need to know about yourself? What do you need to know about the world? What do you need to know about the actions required? And what do you need to know to be in a place to be? Success should be as if you were breathing. But what is it that my very special guest today, Scott Andrew, what is it that what did he do in this book, this amazing book? The rugged entrepreneur, what every disruptive business leader should know. Yes, I did say that. Scott, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Dr. Pat.
Let's start out with disruptive, because I think that's really the best place to really tune in and jump into for a minute. You know, when we talk about a disruptive business leader, you must have some experience in this for this to be sort of your passion hot point. Tell us what a disruptive business leader might look like.
Well, and it wouldn't have a particular shape or sex or religion. Rugged entrepreneurialism crosses kind of all genres, if you will. It's somewhat like Justice and Blind and doesn't have anything to do with someone's socioeconomic status. But being rugged has a lot of similarity. There's hundreds and hundreds of skills and traits. But disruptive is one of by far the most important ones because it's a chaotic world. You're a rugged entrepreneur yourself, so you know how chaotic it is.
Oh, yeah.
In an industry where it's changed very quickly over time, and change happens faster and faster as we develop more and more technology. But mainly somebody has to know how to disrupt themselves, which is why humility is a very important thing, so you can be teachable and tap into that universal wisdom. And you have to start with being willing to disrupt yourself and thus be able to further disrupt teams and organizations within your business itself. And ultimately, when you start to master those things, you can target industries and subsections in industries and literally disrupt those industries themselves. We've done it several times.
Yeah. And you know what I love about this? As I'm reading your book, one of the things that I was really zoomed in on about this phrase, right, is I realized after reading your book the proactive nature of it. And let me make a statement, and you tell me if I'm even close to being on track. The idea of stepping in and being a disruptive business leader, this is what it's come to mean to me, is people have said, Pat, why would you shake things up and redesign technology and broadcasting? Why would you do that? You know, you could just keep floating as you're floating, be, you know, fastest growing positive talk net. You could do all that. Why would you disrupt or shake up the apple cart? Why? I get that a lot. But I think it's a proactive move, meaning let me disrupt. Let me do the disruptive business action here to prepare ourselves for the future. Can you talk to that point? Because, you know, there's something about being comfortable in a dynamic world that just doesn't make sense to me.
Absolutely. And it speaks to the heart of what a rugged entrepreneur is. You have an innate desire, Pat, to make a positive change inside of the enterprise that you operate, not just your own radio talk show, mm-hmm. but the whole industry. You have to see things really big. You have to have enough wisdom about the industry that you're looking to disrupt. And you have to have a strong, strong sense of drive towards doing something that can change it in such a positive way that it is absolutely disruptive, more mm-hmm. so than just a better price or a better digital media format, and not even something revolutionarily new.
Right.
But you want to disrupt it with a force. And as you started to do that, I'm sure you found that people joined you in that same kind of mission, if you will.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, not only have we watched our affiliate networks sort of do the same thing, but we've even offered our technology to them. You know, we've even said, look, we'll show you how we're doing it, you know, because that has been for me. I don't have to worry about competition. I'm being guided by a life force, a divine energy that is so much bigger than competition. This is what I want to talk to you, because I'm reading your book and I'm reading about the four elements of a rugged entrepreneur. I would love for you to share what those four elements are for our listeners today.
The foundational elements, and they're the most important ones. There's skill sets in those elements that I do discuss in depth at the book, but a fervent work ethic is absolutely a must. And there's an important dynamic to that in that it's about learning to love work. You know, we teach, we hear cliches like, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And we've got a lot of young people who are lost because they're continually searching for what they think they're going to love. And the reality is you learn to love the productive value of work, and you find more and more important things to work on once you learn to love work itself. But a fervent work ethic, a humility a strong sense of humility with a healthy pride. And those two things don't always sound like they go together, but they do. You have to be humble to be teachable. And at the point in time where you're no longer teachable to new ideas and concepts, you're probably going to lose your disruptive edge. So you've got to be humble, but also it's okay to be proud of what you do and happy about what you do and take some very serious pride in it, or you probably won't pull a lot of people with you if they don't sense that pride and sense of deservance, if you will. And then mental toughness, and that's just that's not anything new that entrepreneurs don't know about. I've got an exercise about raising your mental toughness quotient in the book, because the world is always changing. I love your view on not having competition. That's John Wooden's view. He always said, we don't prepare for the other team's defense. We just run UCLA's offense the best we can, and we don't have to worry about their defense. I love that attitude in business. But even with that, it's still a chaotic world. It's always changing and evolving, and there's always storms of business. And you got to be mentally tough to deal with it and stay positive, because you don't know what's coming in the coming day. And mental toughness is a quality you can develop and strengthen. And the last one is faith. I love Steve Jobs said, as an entrepreneur, you might not be able to see looking forward how the dots will connect, but when you get where you have the faith to move into, you will look back and see that the dots did connect. And that's a type of faith. And I think rugged entrepreneurialism is about extended success, not just short term or quick success. It's building on that success and sustaining it through any kind of situation or chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And having faith to move forward. You had to have a lot of faith to think you could launch into the talk radio world and launch literally your own network that you believed would dynamically change that whole genre of talk in such a positive way.
You know, I got to tell you this for me, and let's talk about faith for a minute, because it is actually I like to call it my leading pitch. It is the place I start. It is that place which becomes the bedrock of everything else I do. And it's hard to explain to others, but in your book, you've done a beautiful job of it. You know, you've done a beautiful job of saying to folks, wait a minute, let's talk about rugged, and these four different aspects of what you define are just beautiful, and they work in such harmony together. You know, I had a friend say to me a quote, you know, by I think Lewis, was humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. And, you know, that stuck with me. It took me a really long time to process that, right? But it stuck with me for a really long time. It's also, humility is also the bedrock of every 12-step program out there. I want to ask you this question. In your experience, your life, and by the way, I love this book. This is one of these books that you got to underline, you got to take the points out. And can I read a quote from your book, and I want you to comment on it? Do you mind if I do that?
Absolutely.
All right. So here's what you say, and I'm going to read this quote, and then I want folks to know how to get the book. So here's what you say. This is going to be like one of these things I get typed up and put on my wall. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Two of my favorite words in one sentence, faith and hope. Isn't this really the game changer? Have you ever known any successful person or company to be that without this?
Oh, that's a great observation, and really so critical. It's good that those things get put into almost a mathematical context in the book, that faith is an action word, and evidence of things hoped for is a future that's not yet seen, and you have to talk about it, and you have to think about it, and you have to work towards it. And your evidence of that is that you do. You were talking to people about your broadcast show and your decision to start your own network before you actually leapt into that.
Yes.
And then the substance of it, though, is very touchable. That's the reality. You can talk about it all day long and not do anything, but you actually took action. So it does start with the thoughts and the talk, but then ultimately it gets backed up by the substance, which is what you're actually doing to make what you talked about come true.
Mm-hmm. Look, I could talk with you forever on this, but I want to make sure before our time runs out here, how do people find out more about you? How do they find out about The Rugged Entrepreneur? How do they find out about where to get the book?
They can go to www.ruggedentrepreneur.com, and it's got all the social media hashtags and a link to buy the book and to download a free chapter.
I want to ask you this last question. I want to know, what challenges and obstacles did you have to overcome to put this kind of fire in your belly?
Oh, wow. The biggest example is somewhat of a secret reveal in the end of the book.
Yeah.
And it has something to do with somebody who's very special to me. And I went a time in life without talking with them, which was very difficult. But that also drove me. It made me dig deep down inside to figure out how to be direct with myself about what I wanted and identifying those drivers so that I would be willing to work hard enough to overcome even sometimes the emotional things that can be more difficult than the physical or capital challenges of entrepreneurialism. But yeah, the road to success as an entrepreneur is not always built on success itself. A lot of time it's built on some pretty tough failures and some moments mm-hmm. where you have to look yourself in the mirror and learn how the world sees you and what you need to do to adjust to it.
Yeah. I think about, boy, I'll tell you, failure. Failure is one of those words that in our society, when we place it in the backdrop of our lives, what we find out is, you know, we look at those moments in time. Right. Some people would call my homelessness at age 17 failureism. You know, some people may call the fact that, you know, you go through and you try to start a business and it doesn't take off and there you are. They may call that a failure. But this quote sums up what I think you're saying to people and inviting us to. And it's in the latter part of your book. When you talk about drive and purpose, it's the quote from Michael Jordan. Some people want it to happen. Some people wish it would happen. Others make it happen. My mama was from the Deep South, and she would say to us girls, she'd say, girls, faith without works is dead. Never knew what that meant till later in life. But when I figured that out, I got it.
You what sound like you somebody who knows how to take action, that's for sure.
Oh, I got a great mama. I got to tell you. Yeah, best fried chicken on the planet, but I want to tell you something. It was about having three girls, her first one at 12, her second one at 13, and knowing how to get the girls being successful in life. Here's my question for you, and I want to thank you so very, 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 very much for joining us today. There's so much more we could talk about. I hope you will come back. We're in the middle of COVID-19. People have been affected by it. We've been affected by it and decided to grow. Now, I want to ask you, the rugged entrepreneur does what during COVID-19? I know. Don't you love that question?
It's a great question. And so many people are in a situation where they're a little bit more not helpless to anything, but they're going to have to change they're going to have to pivot entirely, maybe even out of the industry they're in. You pivoted back in March and quickly saw that we were going to have to deem our franchisees and ourselves essential and not just say it to ourselves, but to document it. And there were different state regulations, county regulations, city regulations. There was no conformity across the board. So rugged entrepreneurs had to deem themselves or pivot their business to make it essential in a way where they could stay open just to survive. And, we were able to do that because we thought about it early and we paid close attention to it. So I know that you always have to be ready to pivot, never more so than in a time like COVID. And there's been some continuous pivoting going on in many industries.
Yeah. And you know, I love this because you and I both know, I think for me, what I took on in COVID-19, I took on the support of people that didn't have the resources I had. You know, the very, very fact that you need a PhD in form filling out just to apply for the PPP. And now my bank has halted all acceptances of new forgiveness forms. And so we're all waiting for the short form. And I think most people don't even know how to begin to navigate that. And I think that's where we could be of humility and of good service to help others navigate these rough waters, just like you're doing. This book helped people navigate the rough waters. And by the way, you've written it in a way that everybody can understand it. It's heartfelt, it's direct, and it gives people the tools and the pathway and the compass to follow. So I want to congratulate you on that. Again, please tell folks how to find out about you, how to get a copy of the book, and then I'd love to know your personal message, what you want to leave us with today.
Well, once again, it's www.ruggedentrepreneur.com, and there's all the information they would need, including how to get the book and a free chapter there. Mm-hmm. And I think all entrepreneurs need to learn about being rugged, and it's not for every entrepreneur, but my message is for the people who already are developing some of that, and it's so fun to be able to teach and be on inspirational in a space that you've worked so hard to cultivate. But my favorite message is our mission is to empower entrepreneurs in all our companies. But my favorite message is just to say, stay rugged.
Yeah, stay rugged. I got to tell you this too. I work with a great team of people. I get to show up and have this conversation with you because I've got David producing it, Jessica, Linda, Kim, Jacob, Olivia. And look, we get to stand on all the shoulders of all previous rugged entrepreneurs, don't we?
Absolutely.
I love it. Thank you so much for joining me here today. Folks, this was a super good news segment. Lots in the book, lots to learn right here from Scott. So I want to encourage all of you, please don't give up. Please stay in the energy of faith and make sure that you step out and know that everything that you conceived, you can achieve. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Your inspiration all day on TransformationTalkRadio.com.